Hey there, and welcome to episode 70 of the Better With Running podcast. My name is Matt Davey, coach of Run2 PB, and alongside me as always, I'm joined by Run2 PB coach, Zacha Newman. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Yeah, big show ahead, Matty. Yeah, good to be back on. And I noticed a lot of hype around last week off the back of Melbourne Marathon news. So yeah, a bit to chat about there, Mattress, with both of us. Throwing a hat in the ring for a bit of marathon training. And we've got a special guest as well, Damien Fitzpatrick, CEO of Pillar Performance. Which is Run2 PB's newest partner. And yeah, Damien, mate, he'd be our first professional rugby player that we've ever had on the show, Mattress. I know you probably alluded to in our interview that we wouldn't last too long on a rugby field.
Yeah, no chance, mate. Absolutely. I think we'd break in half pretty quickly. He stepped on there and on the front row and, yeah, up against those guys, they would just absolutely destroy us.
Interesting chat, though, having...
If they could catch us, though.
Yeah, that's true. You know, obviously, rugby, the impact sport with the amount of injuries that poor Damien has sort of gone through and... what led him to starting Pillar and, really interesting chat with Damien.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I'm sure people get a lot out of it, and he sort of delves into the purpose behind some of the supplements that they've got on offer and what they're used for and, yeah, why people should, get amongst it and try some of those out and potentially increase their longevity in their team.
Especially like, I know me and you have been involved in this now, getting, using supplements and learning a lot more about Pillar and what we can do in terms of aiding our recovery and longevity. And I think, it's good timing as we head into that marathon block. I know now, I've sort of got my regime down pat. So, yeah, be really interesting to hear from Damien a bit later.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Yep, and as I say, that announcement of the Melbourne Marathons, got a few people pretty excited. I saw some big numbers pop on Strava throughout the week from a wide variety of people.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel here in Melbourne with some of the roadmap being released and some restrictions. I guess being able to change environments and run in some different spots with that 5K to 10K. Bubble. So it's good time to be in Melbourne at the moment.
It is. And can be taken. Hopefully us on hopefully we're on the start line, mate, and we can duke it out together in person rather than virtually like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. When was our last marathon against each other?
I think that was BWA
or Chicago.
I reckon. Yeah, I think BY. Yep, you got me.
Yeah, no, it's going to be pretty exciting to build up together, mate. And your week, were you buoyed by the news?
Yeah, it was a bit. Yeah. I didn't change too much of what the week. Maybe the Sunday I pushed it slightly longer just because, off the back of that announcement, felt like it was time to, because I've been doing a lot of two-hour runs and as the announcements allowed us to extend out from 2 hours. So I felt like I could have, push it a little bit longer. So I was still, still in the back of my mind. The thoughts are, is it truly going to go ahead? Like, I mean, there still is that element of doubt there. I think if I'm going into it, I've got to be positive that it's going ahead. And that's the way that I'm thinking.
Yeah. I've had mixed discussions with athletes as well this week because we've all endured a lot of letdowns, with races being sort of advertised. So I think, I think in a marathon block, you really want to go into it with a thought that, yep, yeah, I'm all in and I'm going to commit to this. And that's what I've decided to do as well. And just embrace it and go with it. And I think, you know, maybe in 4 or 5 weeks, if there is any changes, at least it's not, we've at least got a lot more time up our sleeve. I think it'll be 12 weeks.
That's right. I think Dave B, runs PB coach, put in the coaches, our Facebook chat, something about looking at, you know, 7 weeks out is probably going to be a good
time
to make a real concrete decision. But until then, yeah, if you're going to go ahead with it, you're 100% in. And it, like you say, yeah, with a marathon block, you don't want to be sort of 50-50 wondering if it's going to go ahead or not. You really got to be full steam ahead and really take it on, because you can't think, oh, I'm just going to knock out, you know, I don't know, mid 20K runs and all of a sudden pump them out to 35 and for a couple of weeks and then taper. You got to have to be building up a fair bit earlier than that.
Yeah, I think if you're in the position to have a crack at it and you're comfortable with, having a go. Look, you're not going to regret having a go at building. And if you have to pull it back, you do. But I think, that's sort of where I'm at with my thing. It's like, well, I'm going to start building as it is and take it from there. And, Mattress, mate, you had a Wednesday. Did you have a Wednesday session? Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I was a little bit tired from the week before. Mm. I think maybe because I did up the amount of elevation that I've done throughout the week by quite a bit. And
yeah,
I think maybe just the whole, I don't know, end of term feeling as well. And, the whole, you know, the lethargy around lockdown, I think is a real thing. I decided to delay the session to the Wednesday. So took Monday and Tuesday, still kept the mileage high, but just easy running. Put in the Wednesday session. I had to get it done actually because I had a late meeting, or a meeting that I knew was going to go relatively late. So I decided to get it done on the back of, or after teaching online class, and then jumped out quickly before the meeting and used it a bit of a screen break time.
Yeah.
After spending so long staring at the screen, you really need a bit of time to get away. Quickly popped down to the track, the Mornington track, for fartlek session I've done before, but I've never done it actually on the track itself. It's five sets of, it's kind of like broken 1K reps. So five sets of 600 on, 400 float. So those alternating between those, between the sort of, well, my aim was for the 600s to go through in around 72 seconds for the 400. So 3 minute K pace. So, which is, I guess, I don't know, 3K, 5K sort of effort, sort of pace for me at the moment. And then 400 was floating off at around 85 to 88 seconds, so around 3:30-ish pace.
Nice.
And so that was 5K worth. I think I hit the 5K in just under 16:20, maybe 16:19, something like that. I wasn't feeling great. It was kind of like one of those ones where you rush out the door and you know you got to rush back home as well to be time for the meeting. So it was a bit of, I just sort of one of those ones where you just want to get done and get back home. mentally wasn't fully switched into it. I was still happy with how it went. And getting it done, it's a really bit of a strange time for me.
Yeah, 2 o'clock. Hard one to even pre-fuel for, because you know it's so close to lunch, so you may have had a, you know, a snack at 11 or 12, but yeah, it's a tough one, that one, starting at 2.
Yeah, it was. I think I was in the meeting, ended up cooking up some crumpets because I sort of had to skip that main lunch meal that I would normally have just because there was no chance I was going to be able to digest it within an hour. Ended up with because the week before we'd had a bit of a shoe chat with Sammy, and he suggested for me to keep the momentum going with the spikes. I chucked the spikes on for 4 laps of sprint the straights, jog the bend, sort of lapping in around 79, 80 seconds. It felt like I was really trying to sprint those hundreds actually. I think they were around 15, 16 seconds on flying start hundreds. The spikes felt good and I pulled up fine from them as well. Just, I think they're really a lot kinder on the body than the old Matumbos or anything like that. That was the fastest session for the week.
So with this marathon block, do you intend on using the spikes throughout the track sessions that you hit?
Yeah, I think I will. Yeah, I reckon I will. If I wasn't pulling up well, I'd definitely hold off on it. But because I've been pulling up fine, I'm happy to implement them a bit more. I think they really they do toughen your tendons. Well, I think they do anyway. It feels like they do. It is a bit more stress on the body, and then once you're able to adapt. And I in the past I've done it a lot, so, and it has worked for me. So I guess I will. The aim is to continue, but not doing massive sessions in spikes.
You wouldn't go further than 8K?
No. So I remember doing a session of sort of 5x mile reps, all in spikes with a jog lap recovery. And, in the end, you're over 10Ks of running in the spikes. And, I wouldn't be trying to do anything like that. Yeah, so that was on the Saturday, a bit of a progression on last week's progression run, where I went to Frankston Reservoir again, and I wanted to hit around about the same distance and the same amount of hills, but just a little bit more quality in it. This session works in perfectly for the where I start on the reservoir loop and where the hill is. So it's a 4K tempo, then 3x300, it ends up 360 meter hill reps. It's basically the whole climb of this steep section of the hill, and then another 4K tempo. So the first 4K tempo felt good. It was sort of, I think around three, I was trying to hit around 320 to 325-ish to sort of maintain for the first one. And then, well, these hills though, Zach, are there?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the elevation, yeah.
They're, I think I'll climb about 36 to 38 meters in that 360 meter from the hill. So it's steep, really hurting by the top. And then this one's, I find, a real mental gain, because you get to get that last hill rep done.
Mm.
You got to then quickly try to recover before knocking out that 4K tempo. And I find that it's a really good strength sort of marathon feeling session, because you've really pushed the fatigue on so much, and then you've got to dial it back and try to, stay relaxed, but still fast enough that you're ticking over quite well. So I know I was a lot slower on that second 4K of the tempo. I think I was more around 3:30.
Yeah.
Trying to keep them just under 3:30.
But in that one, you're trying to be pretty controlled in the second tempo, rather than sort of looking at it and go, oh, I've got to run faster than my first. I think it looks like you ran it pretty disciplined in that second tempo.
Yeah, that's a real good point. Yeah, in the fact that it isn't one of those ones where you're like, all right, now I've got to really dig deep and hammer myself. It's more like I want to try to run this controlled and think about, this is what I guess would be more half marathon kind of effort.
Yeah.
Other than sort of, that 5K, 10K where you're really trying to get into that high end VO2 territory. So yeah, that was a pretty long morning actually getting out for that session, but enjoyed it.
I'm a big fan of that workout where you've got the hills in the middle and then you've got to come off and run efficiently and run off that tiredness in the legs. Teaches you a lot about just that feeling you get in a marathon, the back end.
Yeah, it doesn't
really simulates that.
And then also, like with those hill reps, you're building up a fair bit of lactate in the system, and then you're basically making your body deal with that build up in lactate at around sort of that half marathon effort. So there's a lot of positives with that sort of a session. And I guess it is one that you've got to build up to. It's not something that you just jump in and get done. But then the Sunday was, I decided that I wanted to go a little bit longer than what I'd been doing previously, where I just sort of stuck to around that two hour mark. And the plan, I wanted to get out around 29K. Ended up, I went out along this road, and I know there's a dead end to the road, basically. It ends at a T intersection. And then I decided that I wanted to get to the end of that road and then run back. So that ended up adding a couple more K on to the long run, but I was feeling fine for it. So I decided to up it a little bit. And with the marathon, 12 weeks away, I thought there's nothing wrong with pushing it out a little bit further at this stage. And then especially because I felt like I was I was feeling all right. If I was a bit more tired, I definitely would have backed it off. But I do find that, yeah, it's weird. You start, like I started that run, and, you know, having said that, if I was tired, I was actually really quite tired at the start of the run. But then, I don't know, halfway through, something sort of clicked, and then I started feeling fine again. And I feel like when you, especially deeper in a marathon block, you're starting your runs more tired, but you're finishing them more refreshed. It's a really strange feeling. You'd think it'd be the completely opposite.
But I
definitely found this on Sunday when I got out for, it ended up 31K at 4:17. Just over 2 hours, 10, I think 2 hours, 17 maybe. Yeah.
No, I can totally relate to that feeling. As you get to, I think it's just, look, as you get fitter and your workouts become probably a bit stronger, and then you've got your other runs in there. The start of your runs, may come out slower, but you end up finishing just coming in the ground a lot better. It probably sounds like your body's just clicking as well, as you've put together a really good last sort of 6-8 weeks. I think the Sunday run, and you're sort of gradually pushing that out. It's great sign.
So keen to keep, I guess, building from here. I will structure in a couple of down weeks, probably not this week, but next week I think I'll structure in one. Because, like you said, I've had a fairly consistent sort of 6 to 8 weeks, and, body's ready to keep building, but I just got to be mindful of, I think it's not just about, like, I feel like my body's fairly robust at the moment. It's more the energy.
Yeah.
The energy. And then, if the energy starts dropping off and the immune system starts lowering, and then you get sick, and then it just spirals out of control. So, that's what I've got to keep in mind.
It's the fun part about the marathon build-up is, there's so many elements at play. I think it's a lot more manageable when you're in that 10K half, because you don't have those workouts that you may just be on the edge, and you go over it because you've got that hanging over your head that, I've signed up for a marathon, and, I need to commit to and finish what's on the paper. Whereas, I guess it's like, not going too close to the fire, but not in the fire. Every day, you've got to really use some self-control, I guess, some discipline in the marathon build-up, because, it can unravel really quickly if you just go too close in a couple of days.
Yeah, you run it's a very fine line that you can run with the marathon. And, you've got to be, then listening to your body and making sure that, like that week, I could feel that a Tuesday session was going to really could potentially push me over the edge, because I was fatigued. Whereas I know it was still a little bit flat on the Wednesday, but I got through it and managed to, get out the week and run 135 Ks for the week. So, don't be afraid to back it off if you are being honest with yourself and not saying, and then not thinking, I'm taking the soft option. Just being honest with yourself and backing it off if needed.
And having that objective eye with a coach, it helps immensely. Your coach can see some things on paper, but unless they actually hear it and you communicate and say, "Hey, I'm actually tired," I know we can look at some things and go, "Oh, that just looks like a normal, an easy run that you've ticked off," but it could be something underlying that you kind of have to communicate. And that's why open lines of communication in the marathon block are essential.
Yeah, absolutely. And your week, mate, 118 sweet ones out there.
Yeah, so I'm pretty happy with the, getting up to the above 110 again. And just as I was sort of mentioning earlier, Mattress, I was hearing that news at Melbourne, and there was some certainty, and I guess around a race being on offer. Probably put a bit of spring in the step. I know just here we've had our virtual race, and that was a really good opportunity, I guess, in that lead up, we had that over our head that, we got to commit and get into this race mode. And now knowing that Melbourne Marathon, is on offer, that's certainly helped. And I just feel, felt good in my runs during the week, and was, again, that Thursday I've been using as a real sort of longer and strength session. And this time pushed it out to, or changed it up to a 3x3K session off of 500 float. So I guess it's a, using the floats in there and the longer reps is a way for me to transition into the marathon style workouts. And that those 3Ks, I wanted to kind of just hit a little bit above target marathon pace for the first one, and then get into marathon feel for the rep 2 and 3. And I was sort of sitting at that 3:25 pace for the 3Ks. And the floats, again, keeping it pretty honest, at like 3:50, 3:55s. And yeah, getting used to the mindset you have to get into for the marathon-based workout. So those sort of longer time on feet workouts where you really got to dial in. In some instances, you've got to be able to, it's a tricky one, you got to be able to sort of not be too dialed in that you're so focused that it's, there's a lot of pressure. You want to be able to run strong and but relaxed. So yeah, it's a fine balance on that one. And I know this session I'll extend out to 4 reps or 3x5K, 4x5K. So yeah, it's a good stepping stone, this workout.
Yeah, really, I guess when you're extending, you're not, yeah, the progression on it is more time, not yeah, necessarily faster, but more time.
Correct. More, yeah, time, yeah.
In the workout. Right. Yep, that was good. And then you finished strong too over those last few Ks. That was the last 3K was your fastest rep.
Yeah.
3:24, 3:20. Boom.
Yeah, finish on pretty flat area. So I guess where I go along that path, you get a couple of, you're on a bike path, so you get a couple of little rises you have to deal with. But overall was 3:30. So I think just getting that amount of I guess it's just hardening the legs up over the distances. That's the big takeaway I get from that, and the mental gains.
Yeah, callousing it up.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, what I'm noticing, I think, in the last probably 3 weeks is I'm just recovering better on my runs after. I'm not running them any effort-wise any harder. I just feel better in the recovery run. So, so even Friday, just going out for 50 minutes and was sort of back into thinking, okay, Saturday I can get myself going again for another workout. And my Saturday workout is I wanted to sort of get back in and to sort of touching on 10K pace. So I had a 8 minutes at marathon effort into a 2.5 minute recovery, and then 3x3 minutes off a short recovery, which is 60 seconds, and trying to hit like 3:05 for that. So pretty strong, I guess more 5K, 5 to 10K effort. And then, yeah, just coming off those 3 minutes back into just a 1 minute on the recovery into another 8 minutes. And again, just simulating that feeling of running on the tired legs at the end of a marathon is where my sort of head is at in those sessions. And they'll get a little bit longer, the tempos before and after in a workout like this. So a little bit similar without the hills to your broken tempo. Broken session, yeah.
What I called mine a hill sandwich. Yours is like a 3 minute rep sandwich.
It's also just important to touch on that still bit of strength, bit of turnover as well, like pushing into that 10K, 5K effort. And then that may change with the fart legs. I know we both like to keep the fart legs in, at least once every 2 weeks, even though we're doing longer mileage throughout the week, it's still important to tick those boxes as well.
Yeah, it isn't like with a session like is that last rep where you've got quite a bit of fatigue in the legs already, and it's both mentally and physically get so much benefit from it. But do you find it's some days it's like, I know on the after my last hill rep, I was like, oh, the first 2 or 3 minutes is going to be hard work, and then I'm going to settle. It's like your body's being able to move that lactate out, utilize it, and then you're right again. But other times it's like I'm really active, like I'm activated, everything's switched on, and pulling back from here, you've gone from a 3:04 3-minute rep, 3:04 pace 3-minute rep, and then you're dialing it back to 3:13 3:10. Did it feel a lot easier pulling it back, or was it like, oh?
Yeah, that's right. That's what I like about these sessions as well. You kind of start to get your head around going, oh, this feels comfortable, and if you're really efficient at this pace. So when you're doing 304, 305, and then you back out to when you have to push out the marathon pace, 325 is still a lot easier. So yeah, maybe physiologically you're getting benefits, but also mental benefits where you start to think, okay, I can feel efficient and comfortable at this pace. Definitely matches. And then finished up long run, 2 hours. So I've had a couple, last week was 2 hours. Before that, I was sort of had a couple of weeks, hour 50, and I'm just gradually built. And now it's 2 hours, and everything above now in the next 12 weeks will be 2 hours and above. And I'll start to get into potentially some workouts at the back end of a long run. The other thing I'll do now is start to switch from the Tuesday, Friday type workouts rather than going Thursday, Saturday. I've had that phase where I was kind of building and I like that, the workouts close to each other to kind of, really in that base building phase, but to space it out now that the Tuesday can be pretty solid and then have a longer break, but more mileage in between to then hit Friday again and then another break before Sunday, because that Sunday long run becomes, I want to be feeling good on that and a bit of an emphasis on the Sunday long run.
Yeah, it gets obviously pretty important, most important for the week, especially in a marathon block, that long run. And you ticked over that one pretty quick too, the 2 hours in 4:16 pace.
Yeah, change of environment, being able to get out to the Yarra Flats now. We've got that bubble extended. So, I think just done a lot of running, obviously, on the Yarra Boulevard, and the legs just felt really good on the softer surfaces. Like, just feel like they've been hardened up on running on the concrete on the bike paths. And then to get on the soft, it just felt really comfortable and just got flowing. And didn't look at the watch. It just felt, a talking pace. And I think it's a byproduct of just things clicking in terms of, some good back-to-back weeks and workouts. Maybe having that marathon in the back of the head's also kind of helped as well.
Gets you a bit more fired up to get out there and push it a little bit.
Yeah.
Controlled, but like you're not just where you're thinking, I'll just jog around and just cruise and get time on the feet. You're like, oh, no, there's a bit more of a purpose too.
Exactly, yeah. And even just the little things around, like when you're starting a marathon block is, getting it. And we did we had some of the coaches, and there's going to be another social post with some other coaches' thoughts on that, starting the marathon block. And I know me personally is, prioritising recovery, the 1%ers now, and starting to lock in and, taking the easy runs easy was my big takeaway. And I think, now we've sort of started on that marathon journey. It's, the focus has shifted a little bit into
that. Good signs, mate. Good week to start off the marathon block prep.
Yeah, no, I'm excited, mate. And then having that carrot that me and you are going head to head also helps.
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to it. So, mate, we had a few. There was only a couple of races that sort of occurred over the weekend. A couple of 5K races as well. Like, they're pretty exciting to hit up a 5K road. I don't know if I've ever really done a 5K road, to be honest. Most of the 5Ks I've done, well, other than park run.
Yeah. There's not many that, there's some that are part of events, but I've tended to go for the longer 10K half marathon options. But yeah, these are sort of more specific 5K events. So that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. So we had, one of the Roll Cycles Hobart 5K road, and we have one of our athletes coached by Josh Harris, Brad Tenick. When this came through, Zaka, I was super, super impressed. Broke 15 minutes, 14:55 for fifth place.
I know, massive run. I know Joshy Harris, once he was out there on the course, he sent through a result, absolutely stoked with that, because he's actually had a couple of injury issues, had a stress reaction. So they've actually really modified the program and being able to get back from that stress reaction, and then he utilized the bike. It just goes to show there's so many different ways to skin a cat, and what works for, it's just not a one size fits all. And Brad's testament to this, because he's come out and run a PB off a build that he traditionally wouldn't have had over, you know, a 5K. So, yeah, massive run. And, yeah, there's plenty in store for Brad as he keeps building.
Yeah, that's right. Massive. And, yeah, really, really excited to see what Brad can do. And what are your athletes down there also? Zacha, Paul Reason.
Paul, he actually, we'd penciled this race in probably a month or so ago. And unfortunately, the timing didn't work out well. We had to get the jab and he sort of fell a bit sick off that and really run down, which a lot of people have sort of endured. And tough one because, you know, you're going with full confidence that week out and then that sort of just curtails you. And we took a couple of extra days off and we were umming and ahhing. He ended up wanting to just toe the line, enjoy the experience and, see what happened on the day. And he actually ran really well. He ran 18:30. He also mentioned just from the day it was quite windy down there. And we just wanted to use this as a good opportunity to have a crack and just take it as it comes. And some days, when you've had that interrupted last few days, it's great that he just showed up and had a crack. And he's actually training for the Point of Pinnacle, which is it's listed on their website, the world's toughest half marathon. I think it's just based on the elevation, which is something you'd like mattress.
Maybe.
Well, 1,200 meters in elevation over the course of a half marathon. So, yeah, it's been an interesting build because Paul's, he's really got some wheels and he's moving well. And we've also got that in mind that we're building a base and the foundations for the Point of Pinnacle, which is in November 20.
21. Yeah. One of our coaches, Karina Fife, has actually won that race a couple of times there. So I'm sure she'll be able to have some hot tips for that one too.
Yeah.
And then, the other race was the Adelaide Fitzy's 5K fun run where coach Madeline Heiner had one of her athletes, Julia Bilbao, run a 5K new PB, taking 2 minutes and 7 seconds off her last 5K. So in a 21:42. So that's a huge run for Julia.
That's a cracking run, yeah. And I don't think there's been a lot of opportunities to keep running those 5Ks. So to get out there and have a chance in that race environment. Big, big move, taking 2 minutes off since February. So, yeah, heading towards sub 20 territory in down the track, I'd say.
Yep, absolutely. No, congratulations, Julia. And great to see a couple of races going ahead.
We're delighted to be joined on the Better With Running podcast with Damien Fitzpatrick, CEO and founder of Pillar Performance. Damien is an ex-professional rugby union player, played at Sydney Waratahs 2009 to 2020, and he also played a bit overseas. Injuries late in his career, including some consecutive ACL ruptures and basically getting some advice from the medicos that, enjoy it while it lasts, you don't have much longer playing. Pushed Damien to taking excessive amounts of anti-inflammatories, which, harmful effects on the body. And it forced him to look into the alternatives of extending his career and opened his eyes up to micronutrition. And then upon finishing his career as a rugby player, he set out with a mission, working alongside some of Australia's best dietitians and sports scientists to develop a range of sports and micronutrition products. Fast forward now, in just over a year, Pillar is disrupting the traditional supplement market, and Run to BB is really excited to join forces with Pillar as a partner. And Maddie and I wanted to get Damien on and talk a little bit more about Pillar and learn a bit more about Damien. So welcome to the show, Damien.
Zacha, thank you for having me. And Maddie, sorry. Thank you for the nice intro, Zacha, but also thank you for having me, Matt.
Yeah, sorry to have you on the show, Matt.
It's good to be here, guys.
Yeah, I guess from the outside, myself and Zacha, we're as far away as it gets from being rugby players. I don't know how. I think we'd snap, but taking a couple of steps on the field. But yeah, we were interested in some of the learnings of your professional athlete and your career. I guess that can be adopted, and in particular coming back from some serious, exceptionally serious injuries, because you had three knee reconstructions, is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, thanks for saying, you know, it's, you guys are quite far away from being rugby players, because it makes me feel better to how far I am away of being what I would call a runner. But yeah, unfortunately, I was struck down in the middle of my career with a bout of very serious knee injury. So I had ended up having three ACL ruptures in the space of 18 months, and they were all on the one leg. And all non-contact, which is very rare in the ACL. But like ACL in itself, having that cruciate ligament tear is not uncommon in the football codes or codes where, you know, pivoting is quite common. But to have them within the space of the time that I did meant that basically I would tear it, do the full rehab, tear it again. And I did that day one preseason. I was due to come back to train, tore it again. And then I did the full rehab again. And then it tore literally to the point where I was in France playing at that time, and they did some deeper investigation as to why this was happening. I was 24 at the time, and I'd been playing for, I was professionally contracted kind of straight out of school, which I was really blessed to be in that situation. But they quickly went and realised that that wasn't normal. So the French surgeon at the time at the club I was playing with over there suggested that I went to see. And I was really lucky. I was playing in Lyon at the time, and that was very, in Europe, was a place almost the centre of orthopaedics, and where a lot of the European football teams would send their players to go get surgery on. And I was lucky enough to be put into this surgeon, and who just kind of raised his eyebrows at all the situations where my knee kept tearing. And what he discovered was that, in fact, it wasn't just bad luck. It was a genetic problem that I had with my tibia on my left leg. And essentially it was kind of like this tibia was slightly tipped a bit forward that way. And I had two options. One was to retire, because if he was to reconstruct my knee again, it would just inevitably, the ACL would be under too much pressure, like a tight guitar string, and it would snap again. Or he said, look, we can kind of do this procedure that would straighten your leg like back up this way. And I said, oh, well, that sounds good. Like, let's do that one. He said, oh, that's going to require a very big surgery. And what it required was what was called a tibial osteotomy. So he basically had to break my left tibia while at the same time reconstructing the knee. And they, at the same time, again, wanted to really shore up that joint. So they took a piece of my ITB, which everyone knows kind of runs down the outside of your thigh, wrapped that around the front of the knee. But I got through that surgery. It was about a 6-hour surgery. I did kind of 3 months up into the Alps in recovery up there, and I was managed to be the first rugby player in the world that has ever stepped back onto the field from that surgery. And it was a long road back. Like, it was 12 months back into it. And even though I played rugby, and you guys, I know, you know, all of your audience is running background, but I think the adversity and having to overcome injuries is just universal in sport. And it's probably something that I think every single person here who knows steps out onto the track or any sport can probably realize and sympathize with how difficult it is to come back from in surgeries and you know, the level of diligence that is required. And I was able to do it. I was able to then come back to Australia and continue my career here in Sydney, which was always a blessing and something I wanted to do, to continue playing for the Waratahs and hopefully aspiring to play for the Wallabies one day. But I'm sure we'll get onto a bit later in the podcast. What it left me was in a pretty compromised position, that realistically the only option for me at the time, I thought, was to take anti-inflammatories to get through the pain.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, and it would have been, that would be, I would imagine, like, yeah, the breaking of the tibia and resetting and all that going into that would have been pretty daunting, thinking about, like, before, like, you obviously got warned about this is what's going to happen. How close were you to saying, listen, I'm happy with how I'm feeling, I'm just going to leave that one?
I'm laughing because you got to imagine, I was only 3 months in France at the time. And so the explanation of what was required to do the surgery was all in French. Oh. And I'm sitting there kind of like nodding, going, oh, yeah, yeah. And I picked up grand surgery, like, and I'm like, okay, so big surgery, right, all this other stuff he's saying. And then the bloke, you know, typical French surgeon, you know, he thinks he's pretty good. So he then taps me on the shoulder and says, you know, I'll see you in 10 days. And I was like, okay. And, you know, called my parents. Mum and dad were like, hey, just retire. Well, you know, what's the point? I said, no, this guy seems pretty confident. I don't think it's a big deal. Like, it's all right. And Jade, my wife, she was there going, is this a good idea? I was like, yeah, it's a good idea. When I got out of the surgery, obviously when you cut a bone, the bleeding around that space, just with what the nature of cutting bone requires, basically from the top of my thigh down to my ankle was just blue. Like it was just all blue, like it was just bruising the whole way along it. So when they, after the week in ICU, and because at that time I actually had to go over to my right leg to get my ACL graft because I'd gone through my left hamstring, my left patella tendon to the, I had to go to the right side. So I was actually out of that surgery in a, you know, almost a wheelchair with both legs in the air. But when it came time to cutting open the wound dressing, which was like had my cast in my leg in a straight cast after the week, they opened it up and I just honestly, it was like I was a victim of a shark attack. And my wife and I were just looking going, what have you done? What have you signed up to do here? And at that stage, I couldn't even think about playing rugby again. Like the muscle wastage that I had on my leg was, I was just like, look, I'm going to be lucky to walk again, let alone even contemplating playing in the front row at, you know, 110 kilos plus or whatever the coaches were going to require me to do. So it was there then, the mental road back seemed very, very long, but it's like any rehab. You just start the journey and you just start to tick off milestone after, you know, all of a sudden bending your leg is one milestone, you know, then it's putting your leg on the ground without pain is another milestone. And the little wins just start to accumulate over time to the point where, you know, your mental state goes, yeah, I can potentially, you know, put a runner back on and maybe even start to do a squat. And then you tick off the body weight squat and then you put a weight on and then you know, you're building your strength up to the point where you're like, wow, I can actually start to jog again. And, you know, over time, your mind just, you know, learns what to do again. But the very final point in contact sport, which I suppose in running is very, you know, I suppose the last little piece that's quite different is that contact where you really need to tell your mind, and that it's a mind game more than anything. You have to teach, your mind has to learn again that you're not made of glass as much as you feel like you are. So for your first few contact sessions, no matter what happens, you're always protecting that limb or that injury until your mind finally, the day, you know, this, I think the physios are always looking at the field, having a look and going, it's the day that you go into contact or step off that leg or push through contact with it under pressure that they, and you don't think about it and they're looking for that moment. That's when they know you're ready to go. But that does take some time, particularly in rugby union.
I couldn't imagine the amount of pressure you were under as well, having a contract, remember shifting your life over there as well. And then you're dealing with the pressure of that to try and get back, and I guess as fast as possible, but safe. But how is the role of your teammates and the team and just everyone around you? What how do you sort of going with that?
Yeah, I found it really, I actually, for me and my personality, I actually found the first two times that I did it was when I was back here in Sydney, and obviously there was the town I grew up in, and you know, I had, you know, quite a long, you know, there was well documented, you know, my career trajectory, what it was meant to follow and at what age I was meant to be playing, you know, in the Wallabies at and these type of things. And I made my debut in the Waratahs at 19. Like it was, you know, it was straight out of school. Like, and so people were like, oh, well, he'll be in the national team very quickly, to the point where then you get injured and then you get injured again. People almost start, you know, they start to feel sorry for you. You're like, oh, you know, what could have been? And I hated those conversations. I hated seeing in people's faces when they wanted to ask me something about my injury, but knew not to ask it. And so then they struggled to talk about something else. The third time when I was in France, it was incredible because I was walking around Lyon, which was essentially a soccer city. Like it was, they were soccer mad. And I, apart from the people in the direct team, I wasn't on the outside, like when I was just going about my day-to-day life, you weren't bothered. No one knew who you were. And you basically just, you know, you had this mental reprieve where you just got to, you know, be this bloke walking around on crutches, realistically. But, you know, internally it was I think having a good, having a really good relationship with the physios are the biggest things, because the physios end up being in your pocket the entire time. And the physios and probably the physical trainers as well, you know, because you basically go from the physio table into the gym, but you're not in the gym with the rest of the team. You're in the gym with a specialist rehab coach. And at the time in France, this guy was a very, very funny guy, really, you know, know, very good at what he was doing. And the physio was also a very caring guy. So we had a great relationship. And the players, like, as much as they can try and, you know, get around you as best they can, they've got a job to do. Like, they're, you know, they're in the middle of the season and they're your friends. So when you, you know, you're not at training, you know, they're trying to support you as best they can. But, you know, from Monday to Friday, being a professional athlete, like, that, you've got to get in realistically in your own zone a little bit. So, you know, you can't spend too long trying to, you know, get around your mate who's you know, going through a long-term injury. They just, you know, I know what's going through their head and they know what's going through mine, and we just kind of got to get on with the job. So that's why the role of the physio and the trainer, they're almost your hype squad in a way. Yeah. And obviously, you know, your immediate family, like my wife was the one that you know, she did most of the caring for me from a mental point of view, and obviously your parents and immediate family.
How was the mental side then? Like, was there, I imagine there would have been some pretty dark moments. It would have been a lot of times when you come back from injury, it's never linear. It's a bit of, and then it goes back down again, and back up again, and then up and down. How'd you
get through that? Absolutely. And I had a lot of set, like the last time, I mean, the first time when I did my ACL, it was very much like, you know, 23, you know, mate, this happens to everyone, you know, and it's quite common, you know, you see players in codes here in Oz and they get an injury, but you come back from it. You can come back much stronger. You definitely can. Second time was, I found really difficult because it was like, I didn't even get a chance to step back on the field. It happened the first day I was due to be back training with the team. We were doing a yo-yo test, which I don't know if you guys ever bothered to do. There were these, it's like a fitness test that the teams do, and you kind of have to run out 20 meters. A bit like a beep test, but you've kind of got this, whereas you've got this like rest period where you've got to hit the line, you've got to rest for 5 seconds, you turn around, you go again. Anyway, I got up to the mid level of where I was meant to do, and I tore my ACL again, turning off the mark, which was just that was a really tough time. And so basically then after that time went over to France to purely clear my head, Matt. Like I was by that stage needed a change. I'd been in Sydney too long, had been too long out of the game. I just wanted to get away and freshen up as a person as much as my career as well. So that is essentially what took me over to France. And I went over there and played, I think I'd got a gap about 8 to 10 games, and they were pretty solid games. And the club were very happy with me. And Zach, this is where it kind of probably comes back into your comment. Once I had the prognosis of what was required, the French club actually said, Damien, we're going to back you here. We're going to do the investment in getting you right, but you've got to sign for 2 years. And kind of that was the pressure to repay them to go through the surgery. Obviously was pretty damn expensive, and so was the long recovery process. So I was under pressure to obviously repay them, try and get back on the field as much as for myself, but also for the club who, you know, were putting a lot of faith in the fact that I was worth that investment. But there are downtime, mate, Matt, for sure. Like there are right towards the final stage of getting back on the field with this tibial osteotomy, I ended up getting a really bad stress fracture. And I had to undergo another surgery that had to take bone from my hip. So I had to go, you know, cut open my stomach, take the bone from my hip, and then put it on the front of my leg, and then cover it with that plate, which I was telling you guys about, which means that I can't run on pavement now. And that was just like almost like, you know, the carrot was there, and then they move it just that little bit. But just to be able to just keep going, to be like, no, I can get through this final little hurdle, because that was another kind of 2 months on the journey. I think one thing I probably have really been blessed with is a positive attitude. I'm really intrinsically motivated, and that's kind of what's got me to this stage of being able to launch this business, kind of, you know, 12 months of since retiring, because I just, once I know what I want to do and there's a goal there, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get there. And it is, and everyone's different. Every athlete, I've got mates who, you know, in their careers, they do struggle with injury, and you take that core being away from them as a professional athlete, they really do struggle. I was always lucky that I was able to balance my career with things outside it, which I think really did help me mentally. In those times, I was able to focus on other things.
Because you were studying as well while you were, you know, still competing and still playing and had this in the background. So obviously there was an overall picture that down the track, this is something you wanted to do. And I guess the catalyst was towards the end of your career, you were able to kind of try some new different ways to kind of overcome the injury. And is that what led you into starting Pillar?
Absolutely. Yeah. I came back to Australia. I had the surgeon in France told me you literally have between 4 and 4.5 years left on your career based on how much cartilage is what we found left in your knee. He goes, at that point, we know that the pain will be too great. You're not even, you know, you won't be able to continue to play because you're not going to be able to do the back-to-back training you need to do to get to the game. And he was right to the point where it literally was about 4.5 years where the pain just got too much. But even before then, the day that I got back to Australia and started training, the inflammation around having that kind of bone-on-bone friction in my knee joint, also the complication of having that plate, having to need that plate on the front of my leg, meant that I would train on a Monday. I'd play on a Saturday. I'd train on a Monday. And by Monday night, there was no possible way that I could probably get up Tuesday and train to the full capacity that I needed to. And as a rugby union player, that requires really heavy leg weights. Like I played in the front row. So if any of you guys know rugby union, it's those big three fat blokes at the very front. We're about 30 kilos heavier than everyone else. And with that, you require like just honestly, like absolute strength, they call it, not even power explosive. You'd need to just lift heavy weight. So Monday and Tuesday required those type of leg sessions, plus also having to run, and I just couldn't do it. So I started doing what a lot of athletes would do and take anti-inflammatories to try and get through those really difficult days so I could get to a point where the coaches would be like, no, he's fulfilled his duty on training, he can play. Because, you know, unless you're, you know, the very top 1%, you know, you have to train Monday to Thursday to be up for selection to play on the weekend. And I didn't want to give the coaches any reason not to select me, and I wanted to fulfill my contract. So I had anti-inflammatories, but very quickly realized that that was not going to be a long-term solution. And our doctor at the Waratahs, who was, yeah, she was, I consider, you know, a very close friend, kind of pulled me aside and said, Damien, you know, this isn't a long-term solution. We've got to look for alternatives. And that's where the alternatives are turning to complementary medicine and micronutrition. And the passion for that came about, and it was out of necessity. I needed to look for alternatives and prescription anti-inflams to try and reduce this inflammation and pain. And so that was when we started to look for ingredients around the world. So really high strength omega-3, high strength curcumin, products that everyone, you know, from at least a higher sense knew were natural long-term alternatives to anti-inflammatories. But at the same time, we just couldn't really nail down on products here that were specifically designed for someone that was going through as much physical activity that I was, not just rugby union, but like we found a gap in this, in the fact that there was not a product or a brand out there that had targeted, that had targeted elite athletes. And so when I kind of came about that, we had to get a fish oil from Norway, I remember, and it was this concentrated fish oil. And it was so expensive. It was like 280 Aussie dollars for 180 mils. Yeah. And I mean, the volume that I needed to drink this stuff, it was pretty much gone in a week. So, you know, we don't get paid like the AFL boys do. So I couldn't afford that. And also it tasted absolutely rancid. And so at about kind of 2019, realized that there was a huge opportunity in this space to essentially recreate and create a brand and a product range with, you know, at the time I was lucky, I was the president of the Players Association. So we were very close with a lot of the other codes, and I had connections with all the other sports dietitians, and we gathered some momentum in this space on essentially what would a range of micronutrition look like from, you know, an elite point of view. And that's just not, when we say elite, it's not professionals. It's just people who definitely know that they are training higher than the average person. And that's what we kind of mean by elite. And because the products that we were given as athletes at the time were by brands where their target market is 55 year old plus people, and certainly not at the potency levels that athletes require, and targeting specific ailments and injuries that athletes need, you know, be that bone stress, joint pain, you know, energy optimization, you know, immunity, but not an immunity to get through a cold, immunity to get through a high training week, you know. And you guys, I'm sure the way you program your runners, like there is that week when you're leading into a marathon where it's that you're taking your athletes right to that point. Like that would always be mid preseason for football codes here in Australia. and mid-January that usually is. And there is no, you know, that's probably the least time anyone's getting a cold, but that is the one time that immunity becomes really important for athletes, because they're taking their body to that physical level where you know at the end of that week your immune system is going to be down. So that's when they always tell athletes, you know, don't go and have a big weekend on the grog this week, guys, because you're going to, you know, your immune system has a huge hole in it. You know, you need to take care of yourself. And that's when we'd be put on high strength vitamin C and things like that.
Yeah. So then did you feel like you, because obviously did quite a bit of research then, obviously, and had some guidance from dietitians, from sports doctors and such. Do you feel like you benefited then from the micronutrients? Like you had to reduce the consumption of the anti-inflams because you could rely on the micronutrients you were taking?
Absolutely. I was really grateful that I, because at one stage I didn't even think I'd get to that 4.5 year point. But I started absolutely hammering fish oils like they were no tomorrow. And I would try to like show how, and I was really passionate about this stuff. The guys, like athletes, get so excited about their pre-workout, and well, particularly rugby players anyway, you know, about their pre-gym workout or you know, all their uppers. And then, you know, once you finish the gym, you get your night, it's the opportunity you can have to have a nice big protein shake. I would be the other opposite spectrum. I'd be like, oh guys, remember, make sure, have you taken your fish oils today? Have you taken your multivitamin? You know, like, because there's other gaps, and they're like sitting there going, well, you know, just leave me alone. And I was really enjoying trying to get the younger guys to understand all of the products I was taking. So I remember when like we'd go on away games, I'd be taking all of my micros with me. And it was lucky Michael Hooper, who was a Wallaby captain at the time, he was really big into his fish oils as well. So the two of us would always be encouraging each other on how many fish oils we were taking. Because the other thing is, not a lot of people understand the level and the potency you really need to take to get the anti-inflammatory functions in some of these. And we were reading that a lot of the studies that actually require you, in terms of omega-3, you need to take what's one of the triglycerides in the product is called an EPA. And it's that EPA as opposed to DHA, which is really potent for anti-inflammatory, but you need to take it at a 2000 milligram dosage. That was the studies we were reading. So we were making sure that, you know, the products we would take, we would actually be getting that 2000 milligrams a day in, and then making sure, you know, at meal times we were going around and trying to encourage some of the other guys in the team to look after themselves. And I just noticed there was a general reluctance, purely because the product, it wasn't messaged and wasn't for athletes. It wasn't a brand that spoke the way athletes are. Like, it didn't look like a sports nutrition product. And I just felt there was a huge opportunity to really take this category of product, partner with people who know exactly what professional athletes would need from a micronutrition point of view, and then to bring it out. And with my injury history, I also felt that, you know, joint health is probably one of the areas I'm the most passionate about, but also one of the areas that I don't think us in Australia here or globally has really done that well for pro athletes. Like, there's not really a brand out there that has gone, you know what, clinical joint health, we're going to try and see if we can solve that. And our Motion Armor product is a first to market kind of formulation here. We've brought out two patented ingredients, Boswellia extract, which is kind of the new form of curcumin. It's a root as well. So we did a trademark license agreement with the company over there who launched this product called 5-Loxin. So we've brought that out, and also eggshell membrane. And eggshell membrane falls into that kind of glucoaminoglycogen family where chondroitin and glucosamine sit. And we've brought that product out here. And again, we had to do a trademark license agreement with a company in America who launched this product, and it's growing very quickly over in Europe. But we wanted to bring it out and be kind of the brand that people could at least look for an alternative long-term for, you know, for natural joint health. And that's where, you know, probably why we're all on the call. Runners, I think it's a lifestyle and something that people want to do for a long period of time. Like, you definitely can't play rugby union for a long time, but running is a lifestyle that people should be able to do for an awfully long period of time. And that's why we feel particularly our joint products are so tailored towards people running significant amounts, because the stress that joints are going under, you know, the shelf life of a cartilage is slowly being chipped away at, you know, each kilometer people are running. And it made sense for us to trial the products early with the running community. And we've had some really amazing feedback, which has been awesome.
Yeah, that was what really excited us when we got together and started chatting about Pillar and Run to BB and yeah, joint health. And, you know, Maddie and I running you know, quite a few Ks, and we know what that takes, the toll it takes on our body. And yeah, sort of teaming up with you guys and just learning a lot more about it, because there's a space that a lot of runners just don't really go into. They tend to just think of supplements as protein powder and that's it. And that's what I, you know, I don't need that. I'm not going to the gym, but these are the micronutrition area. It's just, it's exciting that, you know, there is someone like Pillar out there that's really targeting runners. I think it's been long, been needed.
Yeah. Ages. And I noticed that really early. Like I retired in April. We are a farm, like essentially we're trying to bridge that gap between kind of clinical pharmaceutical medicine and traditional sports nutrition. Zachary, as you said, like, you know, everyone knows proteins, creatines, all of this stuff. And that's what we all think when, you know, when we think sports nutrition, but also like there's a look and a feel with those products, and that didn't exist. And that's kind of where Pillar has, you know, from a branding point of view, we want people to feel, even to the point where you guys receive the product, like we wanted it to feel like not a medicine jar, we wanted it to feel like a sports nutrition jar, which is why we kind of the lid of the packaging is can be fit perfectly into your palm, because we want people to understand that this isn't medicine. It's not, you know, it's not something you take when you get sick. This is something to stop you getting sick, just like, you know, protein is used to aid recovery before you get those DOMS. You know, we're trying to teach people that micronutrition is something you should be taking today to look after tomorrow. I don't know if you guys have read, like what inspired me also around this running space was, I remember towards the end of last year when I was kind of formulating the range with our dietitians and looking to try and raise some capital to get this brand launched. I read this book called Knife in the Fast Lane by Dr. Bill Ribbons. Have you guys read that? It's,
no.
Yeah, it's brilliant. He was the Dr. Bill Ribbons is the, I think he's still the presently the doctor of the British cycling team, but at the time he wrote this, he was the, I think he was the doctor of the British Olympic team, but he's actually an avid marathon runner. But within this book, he, you know, his background as an orthopedic surgeon, he basically is trying to show people that your cartilage has a shelf life. It's a fact. We can't expect, no matter how light you are, that your cartilage will not break down if you're pounding pavement or lifting heavy weights or doing anything, that there isn't a side effect to that long term. But his theory was that if you, through periodization, a human being should be able to run a marathon at 70 years old. And it just was fascinating for me, the fact, the way he thought about it. And his cap was, if your periodization allowed you to only run 1600 Ks a year, you will then be able to run a marathon based on what he believes cartilage shelf life has. And it just got me thinking. I was like, that's where the kind of passion for endurance running. And I was like, there is a massive opportunity here to potentially give a lifestyle to people who, you know, I feel is a massively growing space, because I feel people are getting out of the gym now. COVID has accelerated that, but people are getting out of the gym. People are now, like, I'm sure you guys have found it. I bet you're getting mates to say, guys, can I go for a run with you? That guys have probably never have done that before, right? And you're like, yeah, well, lose 8 kilos and you can keep up. But sure, you know. But it's like, we've noticed that massively, and our early adopters to the brand have all been kind of triathlon and running. But it was that book, and I recommend anyone reading it, or anyone who hasn't read it to give it a read, because yeah, it kind of spurred me on to really look deep into this space and to see what our products and how they could benefit this group of people.
Yeah. So what, you mentioned the Motion Armor, the Omega, the Ultra Omega. And what other, and also vitamin C you mentioned as well. So there's a few of the products that you got. What other products have you got then?
So we've got 10, we've got the core range, and I'll let you guys in a little secret. The 10 products we launched with was what at the time myself and a couple of dietitians that we were coming up with, we were trying to get to the what would be the layer foundation for micronutrition for athletes. And we kept saying, oh, look, you know, let's the opening range has got to be the pillars of micronutrition, you know, like what would be, you know, your baseline that every single person athlete needs. And that we just kept saying the word pillar over and over again, like the pillars of micronutrition, and kind of that's where the name of the brand came from. But yeah, so we've launched with 10 products, Matt, but those 10 is what we feel cover the at least the opening level of what micronutrition from an athletic point of view needs to cover. So we now have an elite calcium product, which has calcium tetrahydrate in it. So the most highly absorbed calcium on the market, which I feel for runners is incredibly important from a stress fracture point of view. We've now been one of the only brands that have actually mixed that with the highest recommended daily dose of vitamin D3. So we've put 1,000 IU of D3 in there, and also mequinone 7, which is vitamin K, which works really, really synergistically with those two, but from a deeper bone marrow perspective. So a lot of our products haven't just gone and paste like what a lot of the brands here have done. They'll go and grab one of the key ingredients. They might grab a cheaper version of that ingredient, and then they'll put it on the shelf and hope that someone has to take, okay, there's my calcium. Oh, but wait up, now I've read that you have to, you know, for calcium to be really well absorbed, you get your vitamin D3 as well. We've, you know, we didn't want our consumers to feel like, you know, essentially where they're getting duped in the process. So while yes, we have a separate D3, we've also made probably one of the strongest, and I'm not going to say it's the strongest, because even though I might believe it, just from a regulatory point of view, guys, because we're in pharmaceuticals, I'm probably being recorded here, but I would have a very strong look at that formulation, our elite calcium, and try and find a stronger one on the market. But so we've got calcium, and that one there I highly recommend for runners from a bone health point of view. We've got a GCM complex, so a glucosamine, chondroitin, and MSM. And those products there are very common in terms of joint health, but I don't believe a brand has ever gone and done it to a potency level that realistically athletes can benefit from. And so the GCM complex, our Ultra Omega, which is our high strength orange flavored fish oil capsules, which are kind of have a very high potency level of that EPA we were discussing before, and our Motion Armor, they are our joint family, and they're the kind of the matrix that I take of the morning, and a matrix that a lot of the professional teams that are purchasing the products are starting with. But we also have a really high strength activated vitamin B formula, Matt. So that's our Ultra B Active, and that formula there is what I take every morning as well. It's very, very high strength in all the activated versions of the B vitamins. So every level of vitamin and micronutrition, you can have a synthetic version and some cheaper level of ingredients that aren't absorbed as well. But you can then have the activated version of those, which are more expensive, usually more expensive on the shelf, but at the same time, are far better for you. And we made sure that all of our products include only those forms, because we wanted to be a brand that could be able to stand behind the fact that we have gone above and beyond from a formulation point of view. Then we've got a zinc, a vitamin D3, a high strength vitamin C, which is really important for immunity. And we also have, what have I missed out there in terms of that 10? Yeah. And obviously we've got our magnesium range, which at the moment is the magnesium powder is our best seller. But the magnesium tablet is also a very strong one as well. It depends on the delivery system you prefer, but the magnesiums are, we're very confident as well in that product, that the fact that we have really changed the game in terms of our magnesium powder. We've kind of cracked the code on that, I suppose, that sour tasting clinical magnesium. And we've been able to kind of, do what athletes have probably not thought that magnesium would be able to do. And that is firstly taste good, but also tick all the boxes from a recovery and a sleeplessness benefit point of view. So we've used kind of three different forms of magnesium in that formulation. And essentially been able to make it taste pretty delicious at the same time. And I'll give people a bit of a secret. We were able to do that with beetroot extract. And I know it doesn't taste like beetroot, trust me, but there was some key things that we found in the flavoring and also the colouring that probably some other brands hadn't thought about. And we got around that with beetroot extract, which we know has amazing benefits for white blood cells as well.
Yeah, I like the taste. I'm a big fan of the taste.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you, guys.
Very good off the back of a run. What you're doing also in the running community, we're seeing some, we'll include the your Instagram and your community channels in the show notes. But what you're doing in getting behind the running community is really exciting as well. And I think that's we're from Run to PB, so we really support that, because, you're heavily entrenched. You can see from the amount of research and the lived experience you've had that, you know, you really are passionate about helping people run for longer, essentially.
Yeah, we And as a team here, look, our team is small. We're definitely still in startup stage. The brand's only really come out from under the cloak about 3.5 months ago. But one of the key things that we want to do to get our brand out there is to get within the community. And it's been great. Like we, you know, Zach, you and I, we've been doing everything virtually. But we can't wait to be able to get down into Victoria, to get into other parts of Australia at some really key events, partnering with not just events, but also like community running networks as well. And that'll be a big part of what we want to do over the next 12 to 18 months is try and show that we're just not a brand that's coming in from above. We really want to be able to understand how our products can help who we feel is best going to benefit from them. And the only really way to find that out is to get out and ask people questions, because I know there are micronutrition gaps that need to be addressed even further than what we've done. And my plan is to make sure the next products we're launching are based on feedback from runners, other levels of endurance athlete, be it cycling and probably mainly triathlon as well. I know that people are talking to their doctors all the time. They know what they're deficient in from a micronutrient point of view, and we want to be able to fill those gaps in partnership with our early consumers, because that's where I feel there is a gap here. And we want to be that brand where people can go, hey, have you thought about this product? Like, my doctor told me this. And we'd be like, yep, we've actually had, you know, a handful of people say this as well. This is where we're going with it. And be able to, you know, fill actual need gaps in this space that exist, not just where we feel, might be a good margin.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've been trying, the magnesium, the vitamin B. And I've been having on and off the vitamin C with the zinc tablets. And yeah, I found a couple of times I've gone to bed with a bit of a sore throat and knocked back one of the vitamin C's and woken up, and it's been good. So
nice. You're doing the cycling technique. I like it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, that's what you when we had that.
Yep. Absolutely.
Chat, you mentioned that, so that's what I've been trying, and that's obviously something that you would recommend with the vitamin C, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 1,000 milligrams. It's got 18 mils of zinc citrate in there. So, and also citrus biflavonoid. But yeah, vitamin C, I think it's one of those things. If you cycle on and off it, as you said, if you feel that tickle coming on, that was how always you'll hear from performance dietitians often. They know when you're coming into a big training block, or it's the middle of winter, or if you're just feeling a bit flat for whatever reason, that's when you try and give yourself that really strong hard hit of vitamin C. And when it goes away, cycle off it again. From a business point of view, I shouldn't be saying that. I should be saying take it every day and then you have to buy more. But realistically, I want people to know and how to think about micronutrition from a higher level, and to win people over to our brand from that point of view, than opposed to just putting it on a shelf and having people try and take it and then stay on it for a month and go, oh well, you know, there's other brands out there as well, and then change. Once people come in, and that's the beauty of what we want to do now, is build that community. We've got some great communication that go out via EDMs, and you know, there's such an education hole missing here, and that is our job, not just to create the product, distribute the product, but it's also to educate people on how to use it. And that's kind of why our internal performance dietitian here, Pip Taylor, who is, you know, she was an ex-professional triathlete. She's been the dietitian for AFL teams, a lot of the professional netball teams. Her main role with us now is to help us, you know, educate people whenever we speak to our audience, whether that be through our communication and our social channels or our EDMs. Like we make sure we try and add a lot of value to our EDM. So if someone signs up, then they're getting that kind of really, along with, you know, other product benefits and you know, specific brand information. There's that information on how to use it if you are a runner. If there's an information on how to use it if you're building up to an Ironman, you know, because there's different ways to use this stuff more than just what's written on the back of the bottle. And we're trying to educate people as best we can.
100%. And I think, you've definitely ticked that box today coming on. And I know a lot of people would have learned a lot in a short amount of time about some of the areas that, you know, typically runners don't talk about. And it's great to have you on, Damien. I know, like you touched on the communication that Pillar puts out on their socials, website. It's just so many good, a lot of myths that are debunked and a lot of just general information that people can follow and just get bite-size info and go, okay, and then click in and learn a little bit more about it. So
we've got to be very careful. I'll let you guys know, like the regulatory body here, the TGA, so the same, you probably, a lot of people have heard on the news, they're the ones that are signing off on all the COVID vaccine, sorry, but they are the regulating body here, where we've probably got the highest regulation globally. But at the same time, there is quite a limit on how you can and what you can spread about these, because it is a medicine, you know. So, you know, from a social point of view, as while we would love to put the brand up in lights and, you know, say compare A to B, there is advertising and restrictions around that. But if there is anyone, like, I really do reach out. We are super passionate here about anyone's queries, because I think with micronutrition, it's not a one size fits all model. We've got 10 products, and I don't expect everyone to come in and try at least, you know, they're not going to try 10 straight off the bat. But if there's anyone out there that wants to chat to the team or you know, to have more of an information on what potentially you've been told by your doctor and what could benefit your training, please reach out. Zach, I'll share with you probably just our info at pillarperformance.com.au, and we'll have someone in the team probably myself even. I'm happy to reach out to people as well and share my stories and what I, you know, I'm not going to say that what's best for me is best for someone else, but we can definitely give people a little bit more understanding about this space and about potentially where to start if they're looking to try and, I suppose engage in micronutrition from a performance point of view.
Yeah, thanks. We'll put the all the details in the show notes as well for if people want to, get in contact. For that,
Instagram's a great way to reach out as well. It's easy. We've got, you know, someone in the team here in the office that's always kind of managing questions on that as well. So that's sometimes, I know, sliding into DMs is an easy one too.
Awesome. Definitely. Thank you, Damien. It's been a pleasure having you on, mate. It's been really, really informative and just so great to learn about more about Pillar.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Looking forward to this partnership going forward. And thanks for the time today.
Awesome. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Damien.
Cheers, guys.